Parmesan, mozzarella, cream cheese, cottage cheese, and Cassari cheese. Surf and Sirloin. Check them out online at surfandsirloin.com or make reservations through the free app Open Table. From the 590 The Fan KFNS Studios in Kirkwood, I'm Tim Woodburn, and just around the corner is hour number two of the large morning show in the afternoon with Frank O'Pinion.
In sports, good offense starts with good defense. The professionals at Lakeside Roofing believe in the same motto for your roof. Our full-time service department provides the defense to ensure you get the most out of your roof system. A regular scheduled roof assessment and maintenance is the defensive strategy to extend the life of your roof. Call the winning team at Lakeside Roofing today at 618-344-2800 or 314-241-5253 or visit us on the web at lakesideroofing.com. Choose experience. Choose Lakeside.
Add a new day drinking game to your agenda on Sundays because Westport Social is now offering brunch. Sundays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., get on out to 910 Westport Plaza Drive to sip on Bloody Marys and mimosas while catching some sports on one of the massive TVs or play your own game of ping pong, hoops, shuffleboard, foosball, and more. Don't miss their brunch burger with bacon and cheddar with a glazed donut bun or the Wake and Bake pizza with sausage, bacon, cheese, maple syrup, and a quail egg. Check it all out online at westportsocial-stl.com.
Club Fitness is lifting local with the opening of our 24th location in Maplewood. And to celebrate, you can join any Club Fitness for just 24 cents until Tuesday, June 11th.
With 24 locations, there's gyms where I live and where I work, making community-driven fitness accessible to everybody in St. Louis.
24 locations, 24 cents. So come on,
lift local with us.
Club Fitness, the right fit for everybody. Join by June 11th for just 24 cents. See club for details.
Mark your calendars for June 27th as Country Rock Cabaret hosts its Summer Amateur Night. $500 cash will be up for snatch grabs, and that won't be the only gift they'll be giving you. The first 10 amateurs to sign up will get a free pair of Field Box Cardinal tickets, and the biggest prize of the night will be Iggy and the Plowboy hosting and hanging out before and during the show. The event starts at 10 p.m., but get down early to save your spot so Iggy and Plowsy don't have all the fun.
Biggie's Restaurant and Bar has been a staple of the community for over 27 years. At Biggie's, they pride themselves on service and great food. They make all of their dressings, marinades, and pasta sauces in-house. Biggie's is famous for their garlic cheese bread, steak sandwich, and their homemade white French dressing. Come in every Tuesday and Thursday for barbecue pork steaks, and every Thursday and Sunday for Biggie's famous fried chicken. Located at 3332 Watson Road, check them out online at biggiesrestaurant.com.
Petromart is a locally owned and operated family business that's been serving the St. Louis area for over 30 years. Each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next, with 50 locations to serve you. In a hurry? Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items, like hot and ready pizza or fresh fruit and salads. Petromart has something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. Petromart, a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline and proud sponsor of the St. Louis Blues.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
I'll take the large popcorn with that Pennzoil that comes out of that dispenser. This one looks like Pennzoil, fresh motor oil. We never did figure out what that is. It's not butter. It's some synthetic thing. Tastes good with salt, though. That's all that matters. That music means it's time to talk a little movie talk, including TV talk. Because we live in an age where there are so many choices that it becomes difficult to know. And of course, you got everybody going, oh, you need to watch. Oh, you haven't seen that? Oh, just watch the first three episodes. There's 100 of those. So we have somebody to guide you, to help, to steer you to or away from good or bad programming. His name is Dan Buffa. He's here every Tuesday. Look at those phones. They're already ringing. He's brought to you by Window World. The number one selling replacement window in the United States, windowworldstlouis.com, for more on this incredible value as we move along. Now, not right away. I should give the numbers later, because if I give them now, people call and they just have to wait, because this guy's got a lot to talk about today. I'll let him tell you why and where he's been. Ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of Window World, Dan Buffa.
Hello, everybody.
You got your boy Vinny waiting outside.
Yeah, he's my muscle. You know,
how old is Vinny?
He's 7 years old, but he, you know, when he punches you, it feels like he's 14. Yeah. So
The Food Network, by the way, has a recipe for how to make theater butter in your home.
What are the ingredients?
It's just butter, but it's what you have to do to it after you microwave it. You have to cook it for a certain amount of time. You have to do some scraping. You have to do some adding and thing. It's butter oil is what they call it because it makes the popcorn less soggy.
I used to work in a movie theater, and when we made the popcorn, that big old popper, the thing that we pulled out to put in the corns and the kernels was like red. It was like a red salt, and I was like, what do you think is in this? And one of the manager was like, there's death in that if you have a whole batch by yourself.
Well, we're not dead. We've been eating it.
I know, but the stuff that they make it with, at least at the Galleria, the little, it was not even salt. It was like a red, very, very high in sodium salt. It made it taste a little rough.
Tell me if any of you have ever done this. I love butter, and I like real butter. You ever take butter and melt it in the microwave just to pour it on bread or something?
Yeah.
You know, rather than spread
it. Dip it on there?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the best.
Melted butter is not just for lobster or crab legs. Oh. It's for anything.
You know what I do? You know those, like, Eggo
waffles?
Hey, look
who's here. Dan Strauss.
Hey, how you doing?
Man, Strauss.
You know, the Eggo waffles. I'll put those in the toaster and I'll melt butter.
No, I've done it and fill those little squares with melted butter. Now you're talking.
Blow your minds, right? You get some of that garlic powder. You sprinkle it on the butter, then you microwave it. Garlic butter.
Man.
Well, that's not for a waffle.
Butter makes everything better.
Yeah.
And
garlic butter waffles. Butter. Pay attention, movie theaters.
Hey, those Eggo toaster things, they're good.
They are good.
You melt some butter and pour some Aunt Jemima or something.
But you have to get the right setting on your toaster, or else they'll be too soft.
Or too hard.
Too toasted.
Yep. Same with bread, same with bacon. Mm-hmm. I don't want bacon that's like shingles, it snaps, but I don't want it raw.
I do.
A little bit of limp.
A little crisp.
I like it crispy.
But a little, it bends
the
a
ends.
Little.
The ends.
All right, so where? Tell them where you've been.
Okay, so Friday, this was like a stealth trip. I went to New York. I was invited by Warner Brothers to go out and interview the members of the new Shaft film. This is 19 years later. They're making a Shaft sequel where they bring in his son, John Shaft, which Samuel L. Jackson took over for Richard Roundtree in 2000. And now they're bringing in his son. And, of course, Shaft is the worst dad in the world. And they have to work together to solve a crime. The movie is hilarious. I went in with pretty low expectations, and they screened it for us.
Was the original Shaft a comedy?
Well, it was kind of more like an action comedy. He's like this really cool detective, private investigator. He's, you know, it's supposed to be a blend of comedy. I think Richard Roundtree's Shaft was more, a little more serious than maybe Samuel L. Jackson. They kind of brought it up a little bit more as an action comedy, but it's supposed to be a good blend, like action, laughs, and easygoing. It's a very breezy watch. I mean, in 2000, Christian Bale, who was nobody to American film audiences, played the bad guy. And
do they still use that?
Yes, they
he's
do.
He's a bad
they
mother.
Use it.
Shut your mouth.
And in the first 5 minutes of the movie, when he's sitting in his car getting reamed out by his wife, because he brings along his wife, and of course, bad guys are coming to take him out. And he just goes, "Can you be quiet for a minute?" And he gets out of the car with his gun, and all of a sudden, that little lead in starts to play, and that's it. But they brought us out, and this is a good opportunity. Usually they get other guys from St. Louis to do this. They usually bring out like a Kevin Steincross or a Max Foyzy to do that, to go to New York and they interview the cast. Samuel L. Jackson was there, Regina Hall, Richard Roundtree, who was in the new film.
Who's Regina Hall? Help me out here. Where would I know
her?
She
is.
Scary movie?
Yeah, I mean, she's often confused with Regina King, who's more of a serious actress. Regina Hall has been in a lot of Kevin Hart movies. She's in a lot. She's mostly a comedy actress, but she's very funny. She was in, I think, a comedy called What a Man Wants. No, not that one. I think she was in a bunch of comedies. I mean, I would say she hasn't really gotten her big role, but she plays Shaft's ex-wife, and she's funny. She was there. Alexandra Shipp, who is a young actress who's in two movies right now. She plays Storm in Dark Phoenix, and she plays Shaft's son's girlfriend. So the movie's pretty simple, but they brought him out, and we went all over Harlem because part of the movie is shot in Harlem at the Cotton Club and at Red Rooster. And so we interviewed them there, and I have a bunch of clips to play. I thought it was just going to be a little bit of a round table. They bring a little audio thing, but they lit up this room, in the basement of the Red Rooster, which is basically a very legendary fried chicken, kind of soul food place in Harlem. It's very good. And they had cameras, they had couches, they had the stars came down, they sat down, we had microphones in our hands. I was, man, this is like a the closest I'm going to ever get to a film set. So it was fun, and I got some clips for Limey to play because he's like a Jedi over there. I gave him some clips, and I was like,
the best I can, what's up?
I know, yeah.
Pretty well, set him up. I'd like to hear him.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's a bunch of Samuel L. Jackson talking about, because the new Shaft film, the thing that makes it funny is they're bridging generations. Shaft is an old school guy. His son is one of those millennials who dresses different, talks different than his dad. So he's trying to teach his dad the new ways of how to maybe do detective work. And that's one of the things they talked about, Regina Hall. And, of course, the director, Tim Story, was there as well. He talked about, you know, working with Samuel L. Jackson and taking over the film from John Singleton. Well, yeah, we got some good stuff to play.
Now, did you try to do anything to make yourself stand out from the other interviewers? Like, nice to meet you, Regina. Like, mispronounce your name or something.
I really...
He had his pants off.
I tried. Well, they're both very beautiful women. And we had to be very chivalrous and courteous to those
ladies. Samuel L. Jackson, nice, because he strikes me as a nasty guy.
He is exactly how he is on screen. He's very... He's got a presence, that voice... pretty much instantly hooks you. I mean, he's a nice guy. I mean, he answered the questions. He didn't have any, you know, movie star angst where they just like, I don't want to be here. I mean, yeah. he had some fun with it. I mean, he's a really funny guy. I mean, okay. I think that part of the, and when you hear him say that the famous mother effer, when he says it in person, it sounds just as good as he does on screen. And, you know, he talked a lot. Richard Roundtree didn't say a lot of words. I think he was just kind of there.
How old is he, Roundtree?
Richard Roundtree, I want to guess and say that he's in his early 70s.
It's not that old.
Yeah, but he sat there and he had rings.
I can't believe I'd ever say that. You know, when you're 30 and he's upper 70s, you go, man, he's old. Now you hear that and you go, he's not that old.
He was the best dressed. He had a hat on. He had a nice suit. He had rings on every finger and he had a cigar in his hand. So he was kind of already thinking about that night. Yeah. And Samuel L. Jackson comes up and he's got, you know, he starts talking about the movie. But it was pretty fun because you don't get to see them kind of, it was more of a conversation than just kind of a stale interview. We asked some questions, they answered. There was a lot of laughs. We had some fun with it. Usually when you interview actors, they kind of want to answer really quickly. I've interviewed them over the phone. There's times where they just want to answer it like in 20 seconds or less. But there was a lot of laughs. Limey's got some clips. Limey, what should we tip off with here?
I've got a cue for the first one at 30 seconds, which is Jesse Usher,
who plays Shaft's son, and he talks about learning professionally from his older co-stars Jackson and Roundtree.
Okay.
Okay, I'll take it one at a time. So from Sam specifically, I learned how to...
Oh.
It froze. Did it freeze?
Hey, we got a little bit on it.
Oh. All
right. If now we can move to the next one.
Take a script and mold a script to make it work for everybody. As an actor, we tend to become very selfish when we're on set. You know, like all about how it's how I feel, and I got to make it work for me. And
who played the? Who played the little harp?
Yeah. Samuel Jackson, does he play the harp? I didn't know.
He does.
This is as loud as I can make it. I can barely hear it. I can't.
And I picked that up from him.
I physically cannot make it go any louder.
Why? What happened?
I don't know, but I've got the volume turned up all the way on the computer. I've got the volume dangerously loud on the
right now,
board
right now,
here.
Dan Buffa inside is dying.
I'm so sorry.
No. This is. It was funny because I said, "Are we going to have the MP3?" And they're like, "Yeah, we're going to have all that for you." I was like, "Okay." So you just kind of go off. It was like if you watch the video, it's like a film shoot. They have the three of them and they have the six of us on couches and we're interviewing them. I asked him about John Singleton, because he did a 2000 film. The last Shaft was with the late John Singleton, who just passed away last month. And I asked him, and this is where you kind of ask a guy. I was kind of caught off guard because I didn't, you know, when you ask a question to a guy, and if they're sharp, that they might just go, well, and I said, how was it with the Shaft film coming out where your last director of the Shaft film is gone? He died. He's like, and Samuel L. Jackson in typical Jackson style said, well, man, he was alive when we made the movie, man. So I was like, well, how is it when he's coming out? I was like, so it was one of those things where, yeah, it really had to be on your toes. He talked about he actually did get to see the film before it was released and before he passed away.
Did you try to play another piece of this thing? Is it all going to be like that?
It's all going to be like that.
Let's just kind of put, the audio wasn't great. We had microphones in our hands, but they weren't really lit up. So I was trying to like really get close to them, put the microphone in their face. And
I mean, no, he's whole. I mean, this us. Jesse Usher?
They didn't think this through very well.
I think it's supposed to be played like where you're just watching it on YouTube, so then you don't really need to have the volume.
But you do still.
I think the issue is that it's coming into our control.
Just play one more time.
All right.
It's not us.
Oh, yeah. It's not us. Yeah, no. It was going to be difficult.
You can't skip ahead.
And the DB one?
Love it.
Enough says.
Okay, here we go.
You understand, first of all, that We're almost the least important cog of that machine.
Okay.
You know, the lights got to be on, focus pull's got to have you in focus, the camera team's got to be right, you know, the sound's got to work, everything's got to happen. And the more you know about what they do and make their job easy, the better they feel about you doing it. Plus, they also know that I'm not that guy that's waiting on somebody to start talking about take 15, take 16.
Two takes, and we done.
Yeah, right?
Two takes, and we're out of it.
We can rehearse it twice. If you need to rehearse it three times, let's rehearse it three times, because we're going to get it done, and we're going to get up out of here and move on, because the day is long and time is money. So we do that, and crews appreciate that. Crews don't like to be beat down.
Sure.
You know? So you try to get everybody out of there, get them out of there on time, or under time, get everybody home, get them fed, let's have some laughs. Have some fun, because movie making is supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be tedious.
That's him talking about, somebody asked him about how do you make a script really come alive on the set? Like, you bring the set, you know your lines, but how do you make that connect with the crew and your fellow actors? And he was talking about just how he doesn't like doing a lot of takes. Some people don't mind doing a lot of takes, up to 15, at least 10, and he likes to do it in one or two. And I found that fascinating, the way he said, well, we can rehearse it as much as you want. Like, when they do a table read, like around this kind of setting that we're in right now, they'll have a script and they'll go around the room and they'll do the part. But when they get to the set, because just seeing, Frank, how much they had to do to light us in that room, they had to say, okay, sit there, you sit there, okay, here you have mic number one, mic number two. They had them. That took like 20 minutes just to stage up an interview. So you got to imagine when they're on like at the Cotton Club in Old Harlem.
And with all that, it's still too low.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I wonder if a lot of that's for show. Is it really necessary? Why don't you crank the volume up?
Yeah.
Instead of worrying about lighting.
It's like we had microphones, and I thought, man, are these really, because these aren't, but when I was speaking into it, I was like, okay, this is not really going too loud. So that was okay, but the problem with the other ones is that Regina Hall doesn't talk that high. The only one you can really get is Samuel L. Jackson. So if there's any other SLJ.
I've got him talking about the transition from Shaft movie to Shaft movie.
Yeah, generational gaps. Yeah, let's see if we can get that going.
Here we go.
Harlem, that was cool, dangerous, and, you know, sexy. I got to inhabit it in the film I was in, and now he's inhabiting it. But we got to make sure you understand what it means to have the Shaft name. Shaft means something in this community. People respect it for a reason, and now you're going to find out why. And not just because we badasses and we do this, but you got to be sexy too. We got to teach you how to be that. We got to teach you how to be cool. You have to understand what this community means to us and what you mean to this community. And that brings him closer to what the family is. I wasn't keeping myself away from him. She kept him away from me. It wasn't, you know. And like I told him, you know, your grandmama was working at that strip joint.
He's like, you
going to
talk about
Roots run deep, man.
I didn't say nothing about his mom. I'm talking about his grandma. You know? So I said his mom was scared he was going to run into his grandma up in there. That's why I gave him.
Mr. Round.
Yeah, and that's him talking about really going from actor to actor. Because Roundtree, he took it from him in 2000, and now Jesse T. Usher, who was in Independence Day Resurgence, he was in that sequel. He happened to play Will Smith's son in that movie, but Will Smith wasn't in the movie. So this is kind of his second big film. And he's funny at first. He kind of plays, he's the opposite of his dad. His dad is an old school kind of player, cop, detective, doesn't follow the rules. His son is an FBI analyst, and he dresses like he shopped at Gap, and he lives in a very, you know, pop culture, you know, eco-friendly apartment, and his dad kind of makes fun of him for that. So it was like, In the movie, he teaches his son how to be a shaft, and basically how to be cool, like his dad, how to catch bad guys, but also how to treat the ladies, because his son has no idea how to do that. So he was talking about that, handing off the character from one actor to the next.
Okay.
And
have you seen the movie?
I've seen the movie, and again... Thankfully, that didn't happen in the room. That would have been a little bit.
Oh,
awkward.
That would have been.
Oh, that would have been great.
What I think is interesting, and I wasn't going to mention this because I don't upstage you, but I got to sit down with Reverend Jesse Jackson. You had Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
And I interviewed Reverend Jesse Jackson. I'll play a little bit of it.
The audio is probably a little better.
It's a lot better.
Yeah.
Sounds like a pretty interesting guy.
Well, you know, he speaks in that rhyme. He's got that interesting way of speaking. I said, Reverend Jackson, hey, what's up? He said, Frank, come in and tell me what's up. I'm happy to tell you what's up. Wednesday night, we're going to bring home the cup. That Reverend Jackson, a big Blues fan. Yeah.
He is.
Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Wow.
Come on, Frank, give me five. This is my way to keep hope alive. Yeah. That's Reverend Jesse Jackson. That's all.
Incredible.
Yeah, thank
Limey,
you.
Let's see if we can play that where he talks about his choosing his films and his roles.
All right.
Because really, Samuel L. Jackson is probably the only... That's the 10-minute mark. That's the only one that really comes through in this audio.
Hang on a
sec. Thank gosh Samuel L. Jackson talks like Samuel L. Jackson in person.
Was there you guys were holding mics?
We all had mics. So there isn't groups. There's about 12 radio people there, and we were doing it in groups of six.
Well, somebody them view me, they don't know how to microphone. They don't know how to hold a microphone. I said, go away, leave me alone. Yeah, I speak your rhyme all the time.
We need Jackson.
Yeah. Keep hope alive.
Danny is strange. Ready?
We're ready.
Because essentially we end up being storytellers. That's what we are.
Yeah.
And you want to be on the inside of a story that means something not only to you but to an audience member sitting there watching it. And I mean, I constantly ask directors this, even jobs that I take. Have you seen the movie yet? And they go, huh? And then if he goes, huh? I go, oh. In the wrong place, you know, because the whole time I was reading it, I saw it.
Mm-hmm. What a good
and if
question.
I see it and I like it, okay, let's talk about doing it right. Together. Mm-hmm. And then if I talk to you and you haven't seen it, it's kind of like, oh, you stupid.
Has there been a movie that you guys have turned down?
Is that you? Like, now that's your voice? That's, you got a higher voice?
Oh, no, that's not me.
No regrets. There's been movies that I've turned down that have been incredibly huge movies, but at the same time, if I was a part of them, it might not have been so
Right.
Bad.
Right.
You
know I've turned down.
Yeah, who are you again?
You just never
right.
And
not
if you weren't a movie star,
who's this chick hogging the interview?
Did you ever have a backup plan, or you were like, I'm just
what's six of us there? You kind of had to get your word in. I mean, I asked him a couple questions, but then... You know, you really had to almost elbow your way in there to get a question. Because we only had about 12 minutes with them, because then they bring the next group in. But I do kind of find that interesting what Jesse Usher said. And of course, we don't know if he actually turned down roles, but you know, Will Smith was almost going to play Neo before Keanu Reeves was in The Matrix, and he kind of regrets that because that would have been a big hit. And Brad Pitt almost played Neo, so I always find it fascinating that you know you had a chance to be in this movie, but then he said maybe if I'm in it, it's bad. You know, because mostly they'll say, well, if I would have been in it, it would have been a hit as well. But I found it interesting that he, as a young actor, said, you know, if I'm in it, I may have dragged it down. Because Independence Day Resurgence, which he was kind of, I would say, the lead actor in, playing the son of Will Smith's character from the first one, that movie didn't do well. It failed. And so maybe he has experience in taking that role on. And
wasn't there in The Matrix, wasn't there like a fourth one, Finding Neo? They were looking for him.
No.
Ha, 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 ha.
Don't even give him that. Are we finished with Shaft, or is there more?
You know, I'm going to try maybe Tim Story. I'm not even going to try Regina Hall and Alexandra because I don't think they're going to be
what
talking.
What time are we going with, buddy?
Let's go with 6:06 on what he learns from working with Samuel L. Jackson, which is a very daunting task.
Killing me, head smalls. All right.
This is professional. It's professional and tight.
We've gotten three good audio clips out. Let's remain positive.
It doesn't work. That is not anything exploitive about Gordon Parks.
As Roundtree talking about inspiration for the first movie. This is about the only time that he ever talked.
It seemed like a very derogatory phrase. And unfortunately, I know we all called them blaxploitation films during that period. but I've always... Yeah,
stop for a second. Somewhere out there right now listening is somebody who just picked up a new set of hearing aids, and they're turned around to take them back. I can't hear anything.
Or they turn the radio up really loud to listen, and then we start talking.
The story link is the third one. He talks about working with Samuel L. Jackson. And really, you know, this is a guy who's done a lot of comedies. This is his, you know, taking on this kind of movie was kind of new for him. And he really just described it as, you know, you let Samuel L. Jackson kind of lead the charge, because it's his movie, it's his role.
Oh, no, you're going to have to keep talking. I'm still waiting for the video to load.
These are...
Is there a Richard Roundbush?
Keep him alive.
Yeah, but really, the thing that was really talked about the most from all the actors and director was the generational gap, because that's really the whole thing about the movie, and without it, it kind of doesn't work. Because if you're going to make a Shaft film 19 years after the last one, you got to have kind of a hook, and the whole idea was that he was learning from his son how to live in the new world, but his son was learning how to be like his dad.
All right, you want to go to that video clip now?
Let's try it out.
All right, here you go.
I think we're doing good.
You definitely see how he carries himself. There's no turning on and off for Sam. Like, he is that powerful, that strong, that commanding presence. He's that 24/7. I mean, I granted, we've seen him with some real downtime, and he'll just be chilling or sitting there or whatever. But he's really funny. But if he's like doing some emails, and then he looks up, oh, what's up, man? Like, he is just so larger than life. And there is something to be said about someone who is so meticulous about his craft and his work ethic. And
This is nothing more than people in a room with Samuel L. Jackson kissing his butt.
Well, that was their co-star, story. Alexandra Shipp. Yeah, she's talking about just working with him, and you know, because in the movie she has some pretty good scenes with him. She's the one that doesn't want her boyfriend to really go back to his dad, because his dad is bad news. So again, the movie is very funny, though. I mean, I think that, you know, going into it, I didn't expect much. I thought it was just going to be like, why are they making a sequel to this movie? But listening to Tim's story talk about it and Samuel L. Jackson, you can tell that they had a story to tell, that they wanted to kind of bridge those two different groups, the millennials and then the old school people that did things a different way. And the movie is funny. I haven't laughed at a movie this much in months.
Really?
Yeah, because I went in thinking, oh, man, you know, this kind of seems... I mean, Tim Story hasn't done a lot of good movies. He's done kind of those movies that do a little bit of money, they get ripped by critics, and they just don't really... There's nothing... Nobody asks for more. But here, I think this is a material that really worked for him. It's not as heavy as Singleton's movie. The 2000 film was more of an action film than a comedy. This one works as more of a comedy, but the laughs are actually genuine laughs. They don't waste them all in the trailer, you know, the two-minute trailer. Usually some films, they put everything in the trailer and that's it. But this film, there were a lot of laughs. There's one part where he's threatening to hit a woman, and his son goes, you can't do that. And he goes, well, I'm an equal opportunity butt-whooper. I don't discriminate on sexuality. And he just goes for this woman, and it's hilarious. And I just thought, you know, this is one of his better roles. And Jesse T. Usher, who's relatively new to cinema still, holds his own with him. Richard Roundtree shows up, and they have some fun. You know, the plot, there isn't much to it. They're trying to catch some bad guys, some drug dealers, and it's more about the father and son part. And right. I found it to be wonderfully self-aware. Some movies, they don't know what they want to do with their running time. This film had confidence and swagger and knew what it wanted to be, and it was very fun.
We've done 40 minutes almost, or 35 minutes.
Hey, you know
minutes.
What, I'll say this. We played four clips, and that's what I promised. I said I played 3 to 4 clips.
And you did. You kept
and
your
there
promise.
You go.
ARD, Shaft, let's wrap this thing up.
I think, for what it does, I'm going between a 3 and a 3.5, because I try to judge it based solely on what the film was trying to do. I would say 3.5.
All right, 3.5. ARD, Shaft, here we go.
All right, Dean.
Okay. And now on to other things.
I will say that there's a show coming out on Sunday. I've been waiting for this show for a long time. It's called City on a Hill. It's coming out on Showtime. It's taken over the billion slot. It's got Kevin Bacon.
I'm in.
It is a Boston, true story about Boston crime. In 1992, there was something called the Boston Miracle, where all of a sudden they shut down crime. They went after, there was some kind of new wave of attorneys and law enforcement. Kevin Bacon plays kind of a crooked FBI agent who teams up with an attorney, district attorney, to take down bank robbers. But really, they're trying to take out the corruption in Boston. It's based on true events, and it's produced by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. So the first episode, I think it's available to just about everybody. It was available to me. I have Sling. People that have UVerse and Shudder should be able to watch it. The official series premiere is on Sunday. There's 10 episodes. It's called City on a Hill. This is one of those shows that it's almost cinematic. It made me think of Ben Affleck's The Town.
Yeah.
Because
I loved.
The way they shoot the bank robbing scenes, they're very visceral. Kevin Bacon plays kind of like a Denzel Washington type from Train Day. Maybe not as bad, but he's a guy who's kind of gotten around on doing things his way. And working with this straight-laced attorney, he has to kind of, you know, do things right for a change, but he also teaches the attorney how to do things a certain way, how to get things done. And it's funny because this guy's coming into Boston, the attorney, he's new, and cops hate him because he wants to clean up corruption in the police force.
Kevin Bacon, to me,
he's really good.
He's a great actor.
He's versatile.
I'm trying to think, though, has he ever done real comedy? He's done Footloose, which is not comedy, but it's a musical sort of film. He's done lots of, like you said, The Town. What was the one with Sean Penn, Mystic River?
Sleepers.
Mystic River.
Oh, yeah.
And Sleepers. But has he ever done that comedy?
Yeah, I feel like he's done comedy.
River Wild with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, he played a bad... Tremendous. Him and John C. Reilly were the bad guys.
What was the one
movie
with the giant worms underground? That was Tremors.
Tremors. With Reba McEntire.
Oh, Reba was
what
in there.
Stupid movie.
I think he was in two of those. But
yes.
He's a guy who has done every genre. I mean, he's done a little bit of action. He's played the good guy. He's played the bad guy. He played a sadistic prison guard in Sleepers.
Yes.
Where he just, and it's funny.
Horrible person.
Here's a funny thing that just hit me. You ready for this? Almost like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon as far as movie roles. In the new series, City on a Hill, Jonathan Tucker, who's been in a bunch of stuff, plays one of the bank robbers. Well, guess who he played with Kevin Bacon in a long time ago? In Sleepers, he was one of the kids that was brutalized and abused in that prison.
Ooh.
As a young kid. So he's playing, I think he was about maybe 10 or 12 then. Now he's in his mid-30s, and he's playing a bank robber, and Kevin Bacon's going after him, but they've switched sides. Now Jonathan Tucker's the bad guy, and Kevin Bacon's kind of the anti-hero, but he's on the good side of things.
Mike, you acted like you had a comedy.
Yeah, he was in one, not really a giant part. It was Crazy Stupid Love with Steve Carell and Julianne Moore.
Ryan
he
Gosling.
Was the love interest.
Yeah, I won't even watch a movie with a title like Crazy Stupid Love. I just that turns me
now,
off
does
right
that
there.
Did that have Emma Stone, too?
Yep, Emma Stone.
Yeah. Last Saturday was his 61st birthday.
Bacon?
Kevin Bacon's 61, mm-hmm. and he's still married to Kyra Sedgwick, right?
And he was in Animal House, just sent a text to remind us.
Now
he was the not the evil frat boy, but the idiot frat boy.
Okay, he wasn't really the lead. He's never really been the lead in a comedy.
Tim, I want you to quiz us on how many movies he's been in. We all get a guess of how many projects he's been in, because I bet you he's been in a ton. And by your look on your face, we all get a guess.
I think Kevin Bacon has been mainstream actual movies in the theater.
No, just IMDb just does roles.
He'll be 61 in July.
Roles, I'm going to go 200.
200. Lyman, what do you think? How many roles for Kevin Bacon
TV,
in his career?
TV, everything included.
Everything.
150 to 200.
I'll go...
Now, wait a minute. I got to call timeout. Because the way they have this broken down of my ability to answer this question is... How many times has he appeared in the credits as an actor?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, so that's one answer, because he also has
himself,
director, soundtrack.
Okay, yeah.
As an actor,
let's go as an actor.
200. Limey?
I'm going to go 100.
I'm going to go with 121.
How many? How many times as an actor?
Credit? 93.
93?
I would have thought more.
I mean, I think he did have a little bit of a drought. I want to say at some point he had a little bit of a drought where he wasn't in a lot. Now he's in a lot. He was in a Showtime series, a comedy called Smilf, earlier this year. Now he's in another Showtime series. I think he's just really valuable. Mystic River just came on Showtime over the past weekend. That's a good movie.
Great
it's
movie.
Tough to watch. Emmy Rossum from Shameless is in it, and Sean Penn.
You know, he's only directed one movie in his life.
Was it a real movie? Was it like a...
No, he's directed a couple too, but in terms of actual movie, He's only directed one movie. It's
weird because want to do it.
Because usually when you get into it, you want to get into it. And it was with Kyra Sedgwick, who's his wife.
Oh, he directed his wife, yeah.
It was called Loverboy.
I remember that one. Now, that one didn't do well, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But he's been married to her for, I want to say, 25?
I think she's really wealthy. Wow. I think her 37 family
years. 37 rich. Years. Good for them. But yeah, in this new role, I mean, I think this is the kind of role that's going to get him an Emmy. Because it's a juicy role. When you play a corrupt federal agent cop, it's just, if you know what you're doing, and in the first episode, this is what his character is doing on City on a Hill. He's snorting cocaine. He's handing off envelopes of cash to other cops. He's getting attorneys to go, hey, don't charge this guy. He's my snitch. This is all in one episode. He's like, I treat everybody the same way. Bad. That's what he tells.
All right, City on a Hill starts...
It officially starts on Sunday. It's got 10 episodes. I guess for some people, they put the episode out there early, so I was able to watch it, but it's got 10 episodes. It is hard-boiled Boston crime. I love this stuff.
ARDs.
I'd say 3.5 off the first one.
All right, here they come.
Perfectly done.
All right, Dan.
Do we have a call?
We're at 4:46. My gosh, just take some calls.
Brian here has been holding
forever. Thanks for being patient.
Brian, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Dan Buffa.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hello. Good.
I'm good, Brian. Thank you.
What's up?
Yeah, no, thanks. I loved Kevin Bacon in that movie called Wild Thing. I thought he was great in that.
Yeah.
Like Stir of Officer.
Stir of Echoes.
Great movie.
And my favorite military movie of all.
Few Good Men.
Taking Chance.
Oh, yeah, it's a good
Taking
movie.
Chance.
HBO movie.
But you're right, Few Good Men. No, he was
good.
Well, and Brian, what was the one you just mentioned?
No, I was just saying that Wild Thing. It had a lot of sex scenes in it, but he was a corrupt cop, Matt Dillon.
Oh, Neb yeah.
Neb Campbell.
I need to watch it.
Christina Richards.
Legendary female-on-female scenes in probably movie history.
Really?
Is it, what's the, it's Neve Campbell and who?
Denise Richards. Denise
Yeah, that's, gets up there.
All right, yeah, I'll watch it. I haven't seen that. I'll watch that. Thank you, Brian. Go ahead.
No, the other quick thing is, what did you guys think, did you ever hear of the movie called The Mustang?
It
came out. I thought that was one of the best movies I've seen in years.
But it didn't get a lot of buzz.
It starred a very unknown actor. His name was Matthias Schoenaerts. He had been in a couple things, but yeah, the movie was really well done. And it was at Plaza Frontenac, and it played for a while, but maybe he'll get something at the end of the year. I think he's great, but you're right. It was kind of underrated.
Yeah, I just watched it over the weekend on Netflix. So thanks, guys, for taking my call.
I'm glad you told me. I'll watch Mustang. I forgot all about that movie because it is relatively new.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brian.
Somebody just called and said Kevin Bacon was in the original Friday the 13th.
I believe in.
And someone else asked if you know that this is true, and any of you in the studio know that this is true, that Kevin Bacon and his wife lost a lot of money.
Bernie Madoff. It's absolutely true, but she's very wealthy. No.
He was in Friday the 13th. I remembered he was lying on a bottom bunk, and Jason stabbed him through the throat with an arrow. Yeah, I remember that.
Came up through the bed.
That's right.
Came up through the bed. Stabbed him.
It's
right.
It's like Johnny Depp getting killed by Freddy Krueger.
What's the name of the Mustang guy?
He was in Animal House.
Weird name.
Matthias Schoenaerts. He was in a movie called The Drop with Tom Hardy.
Schoenaerts,
yeah.
That's a name.
Well, yeah, I could always confuse him with the guy. He's an actor now, but he was in prison. He tried to escape, and he straddled a barbed wire fence. Scarnuts. Thank you, Limey.
That movie came out, and it didn't really get a lot of play, though. He plays a guy who the rehabilitation program, he has to tame a Mustang.
Because it looked boring. It just looked boring.
And I'll be honest, there's parts of it that do kind of drag, but you really get interested in this guy. But he's not really, and it didn't really have a happy ending. I respect films like that. They don't just rehab the guy.
I'll play a quick scene from Mustang. I mean, it's just what you'd expect. Here he is trying to tame a horse. Oh, easy now. Easy.
Was the horse with David Daly? Sounds like he's trying to train Barbra Streisand.
Easy, Barbara.
If I ever get the exclusive that Nick told me, I'll ask him about Barbra.
Okay. All right.
Did you have to get really close to her, Nick?
What else do we need to know?
I think Billions wrapped up a very strong season on Sunday, and it did what I thought it was going to do. It is put the two main characters back towards each other for a whole season.
You don't talk about this too long because you get some nasty mail for talking about Billions too long. Well, weeks ago.
Let's do it about a minute. We'll do a minute, 60 seconds or less on Billions.
Okay.
So the third season had them go up against different people. Chuck Rhodes went up against Jock Jeffcoat, who was basically his former boss. Bobby Axelrod went up against his former protege, Taylor Mason, and I knew at some point they were gonna, you know, they're gonna stop being friends. They're allies this season. And at the end of this season, when they've kind of taken care of these, other problems, now they're gonna go against each other because in many ways, Bobby Axelrod has ruined Chuck Rhodes' life, his marriage. So season, five, can't believe it on season five already, is gonna be Chuck going back against Bobby Axelrod. I knew it. You can't have them be friends for too long.
Yeah. I just can't believe Axelrod and that psychiatrist haven't gotten it on yet.
And in the finale, they don't. But let's just say if she's warming towards one character, she's warming up towards Bobby and not Chuck.
Aren't we about a week away from Yellowstone with Kevin Costner?
I think 19th. It's on the 19th, yeah.
It's about a week away.
When does Axelrod go back to sing with the band?
No, don't.
That's it.
That's not even bad. It's worse than
it was
bad.
Silence.
Was that an Axl Rose joke?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so.
If you hadn't told everybody, nobody would have known what it was.
Well, you know, two people know.
Guns and Roses. I want to say, speaking of Guns
Keep
and Roses.
Keep hope alive.
Guns N' Roses, they are the one of the few bands to sell out the Dome. They put 65,000 people in that place last year. Yeah. I'll give them credit. I mean, I don't know how old he is. Is he in his 50s?
Who,
Axl Rose? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know about him. Don't care.
I mean, the last time he was in St. Louis, he destroyed everything. But, yeah, props to him. Guess how many other bands have sold out the Dome? There's been three since I started driving for Uber.
You two?
Ooh, no, because they got canceled, remember? Because of the riots. There's two other bands. I want to call them bands.
The
what?
Dome.
Is one
sold
share.
Out the Dome. No, he said band.
Share one band.
Share's not a band.
Garth Brooks.
Garth Brooks.
That's not a band.
Well, a musician slash band.
Okay,
yeah.
Brooks.
Yeah.
And Elton John.
Brooks.
I don't know.
The third one was Taylor Swift.
Wow.
Packed 60,000 plus. So you got Guns N' Roses, Garth Brooks and Taylor Swift.
She's got that cat eye thing going. She's something hot about her.
I mean, and I'll tell you, when they pack that Dome, the whole downtown just gets disrupted in more ways than one. But big props to those three. But, Billions finished off a season. So if you're going to binge it now. Four seasons, 12 episodes apiece. So give that a shot. But City on a Hill taking over that time slot on Sunday.
Is Ozark coming back?
Ozark is done, and I think it's going to come back in August. Because it came back last August, I thought. August, September. They haven't officially released a date. I think they have a teaser trailer, but I would say that's late summer.
Some of these things are so good that if you wait long enough, like I could watch Breaking Bad all over again. Yeah. I could watch it all, because I forgot 90% of it.
Same for me with Sopranos.
I could watch Ozark. I could watch Sopranos again.
When does The Fabulous Mrs. Maisel come back? Is that back?
Another good one.
Yeah.
Probably soon, yeah. I think they've already greenlit another season. Has that got two seasons or one?
Two under their belt.
Yeah. Okay. Ozark's next month.
Yes.
Ozark is July?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to go watch the last season again because I forget things.
I also, one thing I want to start, I know they're starting to do it again, is this is usually Ray Donovan time, is usually July, so we'll see about that. That they're coming back
for us. I think Ray's burning out. I do. I think Ray, I'm sorry Susan Sarandon killed herself. I think she was good on there, and I think Ray's just burned it all up. I don't think there's much left for Ray to do.
I think this last season we saw a different side of Ray and what happened to him, and I think that they keep digging into his psyche and what makes him kind of tick, I think they can keep going. Also, Lee Ev is so good in that role. I'll watch him.
There's something I don't know if people who aren't in some sort of this business ever notice, but for a long time, up until a season ago, Ray Donovan, that character, Schreiber, drove a Mercedes CLS, the CLS 65,
yeah.
I think.
Did he change cars?
Yeah, he's in a Cadillac now. Now, for people to understand how this works, Cadillac went to them with a great big check and said, put him in a Cadillac. Take him out of the Mercedes and put him in a black Cadillac. That's how that works. That's the reason he changed cars.
When you think about it, that car gets a lot of play. It's almost like a supporting...
Yeah, it's
a
part of him.
Character.
He jumps in that car all the time. He's sitting in the car talking on the phone all the time.
It's such a clean car, too. I remember seeing the car like, man, when does he vacuum that car? In between fist fights?
No, it's always clean. And yeah. you think there'd be bleeds in it, you know, but it's always clean. So watch for stuff like that. Watch for what's called product placement.
Oh, yeah.
They make a lot of money because when people say, well, if you're going to show him drinking yeah. in the bar, make sure there's a bottle of
Jack Daniel's
Tito, or Maker's Mark. Tito vodka sitting there.
Makes you wonder how much Dr. Pepper got for Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I guarantee you. I guarantee you, they got a lot.
And in this one, in the Shaft film, they drive around an old Chevy Chevelle, an old late '60s muscle car. We actually got to sit in the car and take pictures.
Really?
Yeah, we actually went over to the Cotton Club, which is a very small looking club over there in Harlem, and it's a nice car.
There's no product placement money to be gained from that because they don't sell those cars anymore. So Chevy, I'm sure didn't pay.
Did you take an Uber while you were up there?
I did, and Uber prices are insane.
By the way, you were in New York. You should have taken an Uber helicopter. They have a helicopter service.
Helicopter.
Uber. No, Uber owns a helicopter. You can take a chopper to JFK. They and I'm not kidding. And they say business is booming.
It is. Well,
it starts at $200 depending on where you are. For $200 to $500, you go right to JFK and you can bypass all the traffic.
The thing about New York is, you know, just to go 3 miles, it takes 35 minutes.
And so, it's called something. It's not called Uber. They have another name for it, but it's an Uber helicopter.
Uber
service.
Helicopter.
Yeah.
I should have taken that because in order to get like from maybe from my hotel to the airport, it was like $60.
Well, take it quickly because they are going to probably do away with it because of that crash that just happened. And they say now they're concerned because there is between sightseeing and private copters and Trump type business helicopters. And now the Uber, there's too much traffic. It's too congested with helicopters.
It's called Uber Chopper.
So they'll probably
Uber Eats.
The more popular it gets, the more likely they ought to shut it down. We are pretty much out of time. Is there anything in closing?
I will say that there's one place I wanted to go in the last 8 years. It was to Ground Zero, and I got a chance to go there. I'll tell you what, if there's a humbling place to go to, when you go up to those fountains and all the names are on the side of the bronze arches of these fountains and you see the tower, and it's a very humbling
place.
Had
you been to New York City before?
This is my first time in New York, and I told my wife when that thing was I think it came up and they finished it in 2011. I mean, it's just, the fountains are beautiful.
Yeah, but New York City itself, you've never been?
Never been.
I can't stand New York City. Do you like it?
I'll tell you, it's crazy. I thought Chicago and California, Venice Beach were bad.
No.
Walking on the streets in Times Square, you can get bumped and pushed and probably
sensory overload. It's too many people, too crowded, everything I can't stand. Urine smell, sub coming out of the subway, no thank you.
But if you had the time, go to Ground Zero. I mean, just go there, go on the museum tour, just stand over the fountains. I mean, just all those names. Just start reading off all those names.
That's sad.
2,893 people.
All right, you know how to wrap this up.
It's tough. Until next week, I'm Dan Buff. I've had enough of
it. All right.
Dan Buff, everybody. Welcome to my window world.
The number one selling replacement window in the United States. Give them your email address. Just get that question about a movie or TV show real quickly.
Yeah, buffa82@gmail.com. So buffa82@gmail.com.
All right. I think everybody knows by now, I hope you do, Thompson Price is in the middle of an exciting but overwhelming project. I couldn't do what he's doing. They're moving to a new showroom in Chesterfield Valley. That should be all complete, I'm going to say, looks like July, sometime in July. And you say, well, what was wrong with the old showroom? Nothing, except this is a whole new concept. They've designed this so that this is perfect, not just for consumers like you or like me, but for consumers, decorators, designers, contractors. You get the idea, so that all of you can work together individually, whatever. It's a really interesting concept and one that I'm sure will get the attention of other people in the kitchen and bath business. But they'll never be Thompson Price. Never. Do not put off your kitchen or bath project because there's a new showroom coming. In fact, if you can, start the process now because there's a lot of money to be saved. I just bought three toilets. Bought three beautiful new, if a toilet can be beautiful, toilets from the old showroom because they don't want to move all that stuff. So wet water fixtures and countertops and cabinets and all that stuff. Tremendous savings at the current showroom, which is less than a quarter mile east of 270 on Manchester. Their website, thompsonprice.com. The Playhouse is coming up with a joke I think Tim Woodburn will like. I think I've been there almost 2 years. I think I told it once. So buckle up. It's on the way, The Playhouse, because it's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Jim Hayes. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. The House is giving its committees some teeth to enforce subpoenas against the Trump administration. A Democratic resolution authorizes committee chairs to take the administration to court to enforce subpoenas that are not honored. The vote was 229 to 191. Former White House counsel Don McGahn recently ignored a subpoena to testify and provide documents related to special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Former VP